Right, this is the Cool Shit Podcast. Each week we round up the latest cool shit, helping us think different and keep inspired. What makes it in, what gets left out, and what gets challenged. Is it cool, is it shit?
Or does it cross the magic threshold and come bona fide, certified cool shit?
Welcome to the editor's meeting.
Welcome to the Cool Shit Podcast, episode 58. My name is Gareth Carter. Bit of a mix around this week, because Kyra, hello, how you going?
I'm good, thank you.
You've found all the stories. You've been working on the editorial team for Cool Shit this week, right?
I have, it's an honour.
So Kyra's brought the stories, and then, rather excitingly, we have a Zach alumni, very talented man, Logan Fisher. Hello, sir, how are
you? Hello, alumni, I like that.
Yeah, how you going?
Great.
Yes.
Yeah. Very happy to be here. Back with the old gang.
To give you some context, Logan is working with us on a project and has sat through the podcast in the background a couple of times while we've been recording. So actually very excited to have him in front of the microphone this time. And someone that's always in front of the microphone, week in, week out. James, how are you going?
Yeah, fantastic. Do you want to stop insulting me at the start of every podcast?
My friend went, "What's that one like?" And I was like, "Which one like?" And you're like, "The one that you're horrible to. What's he like?" And I was like, "Oh, he's really nice, actually." And they were like, "Oh, okay." So, yeah, my friends are rooting for you, James. Don't worry about it.
Thank you, Gareth. Non-existent made-up friend.
So usually this is the moment where I say, like, how the stories, what you've been seeing. But I guess I'm going to go to you, Kyra. How have the stories been this week? What you've been seeing? What's been going on?
Do you know what? This week has actually been really good. I feel like there's really strong stories compared to last week, at least.
You're setting yourself up to fail there.
Oh, no.
You never want to commit too strong at the start in case they're shit.
No, I'm confident.
You're feeling confident?
I'm feeling confident.
Because the thing is, right, we're going to go through the stories and James will make, you know, disparaging decisions that might actually hurt you. Are you good with that?
I'm ready.
Okay, cool. All right. Well, first of all, James, over to you. We're going to have a bit of chat about something. What's been going around your head this week?
Well, me and you were talking the other day about what the kind of the big macro cultural news story is this week. And it was nothing, was it? I mean, there was a load of news stuff, but nobody really wants our views on wildfires in Hawaii, for example. So, but me and you then pretty much at the same time both mentioned a story about Zoom, and it was two different stories as well. So they're a company that have like massively changed everyone's lives over the last few years. So we thought we would start the podcast this week by asking, who the fuck is Zoom?
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? Like, because literally, so I was sat in a meeting with Lucy this week. We were chatting to some guys and girls that have a little bit of a knowledge of Zoom. And they were like, "Oh yeah, well, you heard what's happened with Zoom." And I was like, "What?" And they're like, they've asked their staff to come back into the office. And I was like, that's against the brand, isn't it? Like, that seems a bit strange. Like, your USP, surely, Zoom, is that you can work anywhere, right? And then you talked about this story, and it just kind of hit me. Like, I know fuck all about Zoom. Like, you know, this essentially is one of the key players that has sort of, like, changed the environment and landscape on the way that we work. But I really don't know a lot about them. Logan, as a brand move, what do you think about Zoom sending their workers back?
I'm not sure why everyone's so shocked about that. You know, I was thinking, you know, why aren't people who work at Dreams, UK's biggest bed retailer, why aren't they staying in the superstore all night and sleep? I think it's an outrage that they're sending these people home.
These people, they just have jobs. They don't have to embody the company they work for in all of their actions.
And then tell me the other thing that you found out this week.
Yeah, the potentially more alarming thing. So the news broke the other day that Zoom had included something in their, they've rewritten their terms of service, and they've got a clause in there that would require the user to share their data to train AI systems in order to just have a call. So basically signing away your visage and your voice to help Zoom train their various AI systems.
So let me just get this right. So from now on, every time I go onto a Zoom call, I am basically being guinea pigged to make AI more realistic, right?
I'll tell you exactly what you're doing. This is a quote. You're granting Zoom a perpetual, worldwide, non-exclusive, royalty-free, sub-licensable and transferable license to your image and your voice.
Sounds a bit scary, doesn't it? Obviously, they are seeing a marketplace in AI in the future. Obviously, they've changed the landscape once. It wasn't like they, you know, they tried to change something or they were following a path, the world fell into place with them at the right time.
Or we could do a conspiracy theory if you want.
Go on. I mean, like we talked about aliens last week and I was careful not to get conspiratorial. I'm so ready to get conspiratorial on fucking Zoom. Come on, let's hear it.
Zoom started the pandemic.
Oh, they could have done, haven't they? They could have done.
Of course they did.
Yeah.
It was them who fucked that pangolin.
Oh, yeah. So you say that people at Zoom were eating bats?
That's exactly what I'm saying.
Just in case you are a little bit worried, I just if the lawyers are listening, that was a joke, guys. Take it easy. And if you are listening, Zoom, chill out. And also, who are you?
I should mention there was a bit of a backlash, particularly from people on Twitter. So they've now gone back on this and said, oh, we're not going to do that, actually. We were never going to do that. We didn't want to. It was a prank, which was obviously basically they've been caught and they've gone back on it. But people are still pretty miffed about it because they've only gone back on it because they've been caught.
I think all the tech companies are sort of slightly maybe kind of doing that.
Of course they are.
Yeah. We are all guinea pigs for a future where we will no longer be required.
It's only not happening because Zoom decided it made them look bad, so they decided on their own not to do it. But people think that there should probably be some sort of laws in place to prevent misuse of data without people's consent. So the fact that you're relying on the goodwill and magnanimity of these kind of anonymous tech companies probably isn't a great system.
Too late for all of that, I think.
Yeah.
Anonymity and, you know.
Do you think anonymity is just a thing of the past?
Yes.
It's funny you say that because I'm probably a bit of a privacy nut. Like, I probably flirt with a bit of anarcho-libertarianism, but I find myself looking at this thinking, I don't really give a shit. So, like, I think that kind of shows, or at least it shows me, how desensitized we are to signing away something that we know is now the most valuable commodity in the world in the form of our data, and we just don't care.
Take my data. What are you going to do with it that's going to harm me? Honestly, I could not give a shit. Like, you can have it.
Really?
Yeah.
Me too, I agree.
But I do think that this sort of like AI modelling on us seems a bit out of order. Zoom.
I find it funny the idea that AI is being trained on Zoom calls though, because Zoom calls very much aren't like a real representation of humanity. So it's like AI is going to think, okay, someone says someone's name, then everyone just waves, and like you're polite, you say, oh, you're on mute a lot. Like, I think Zoom is going to, I think AI is going to get very confused by all of this Zoom data.
Cool. So Kari, you've got a couple of stories that you're going to highlight. What are you saying? What are you doing?
Okay, so my first story, AI can now tell if you're gay. So Swiss researchers have published a new study claiming that by measuring brain activity, they can tell if you're gay. So essentially like an AI gaydar. This isn't the first time they've done this. So a study years ago basically claimed that machine learning could identify a gay person by looking at pictures from dating profiles, which is obviously a little bit problematic. So this is slightly more ethical.
Really ethical, yeah.
But like, all of the participants consented, obviously. They got their brain activity measured. But yeah, I don't know. It's still been obviously met with like quite a bit of backlash.
I'm quite confused who this is for. Is it for like people to go like, I mean, I do sometimes think about it, but I'm not quite sure. Yeah. And then they need to go, I'm here for a gay test. Like, what? I don't really understand who's what the actual use for it is it for.
Are the results conclusive, or is it like you're 84% gay?
That's a good point, actually. It can't be a binary, you are gay, or you're almost gay. You're 49%. It's not like a referendum.
Come back next week.
And how does it do it? Do you know, like... And like, how are these people tested? Were they showed pictures of people and people's parts and just worked out how their brains react to it, I'm guessing.
I mean, I didn't read the whole study.
That's the only way I'm thinking, isn't it?
Yeah,
that's
I know. The measure brain activity.
Of nonsense.
But I'm guessing, maybe like they show them like an image and they see what parts of their brain lights up and...
Tell you what would be quicker, if they just asked them.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I mean.
I feel like it's probably always problematic to tell someone else if they're gay or not.
Yeah.
But like, for example, Gareth, you're wearing that shirt. I would never say anything about it.
We'll get AI to have a look at my shirt and say what it says about me.
Seems like probably the biggest waste of technology ever invented. Yeah. I mean, can you imagine someone going, oh, AI, that's going to catch on. What can we use AI for? Let's start a company that can tell if you're gay or not.
Yeah, and a lot of people have said that it's like problematic because it could be used in like a harmful way to like
it's all going to be used in a harmful way.
Yeah, I mean, I really struggle. So like, I'm not, you know, I'm not overly gloomy about AI in general, but I for one, I agree with Logan that this is just feels very headline grabby, but I just very much can't see what it would be used for that's positive.
They've said that the reasons are like it's of scientific interest and it has the potential to open new avenues for research, so just like for the bettering of science, and like that's their justification.
Yeah,
for
so
it.
I agree with James, just ask the person, yeah, the individual in front of you.
There's more science to be doing, I reckon.
yeah
also the company, funny enough, it just says a group of Swiss researchers. They haven't named the company or the...
That
or
sounds very nefarious as well.
It does.
A group of heterosexual Swiss scientists or homosexual.
Turns out one of them is gay, though. No, I don't want to put it on!
No, I'm good, actually. I did mine yesterday.
I don't really have too much more to say about this.
So what about if someone's not sure if they're gay or not? They're like, oh, I'm confused. Like, I don't
that's
know what
I said
feeling.
At the beginning, but that's just stupid. That's a journey within your soul and your heart. Yeah. It's not like for a computer to tell you that.
I'm not sure, like, say if you weren't sure and then it told you were gay, then that could kind of like... I think that could then force you down a particular avenue. Like, I'm not willing to... This is a very strange analogy. I'm not willing to get a Fitbit because I don't want to be told how I slept, because I think if I wake up and see that I slept badly, then I'm just going to think, oh, well, this day's fucked. And so I think... I think
go for a gay eye test and you're gay, you'll be like, right, I've got to change my lifestyle.
Yeah, no, exactly.
I've been doing the wrong things.
I'm agreeing with you. I think that should be a natural journey within the human soul.
Okay, so this story is a nonsense and we are going to move on.
Okay, next. UFC star Derek Lewis, who's known for saying, my balls was hot.
My balls was hot.
So he's just a very entertaining character in UFC, and this phrase has become quite iconic. And so Manscaped, who are a male grooming company, have jumped onto this in their latest ad. So it shows Derek flaunting his cool and sweat-free balls thanks to their product in a really funny ad. I can show it to you.
My name is Derek Lewis and I have the record for the most knockouts in UFC history, but there's one thing I couldn't beat, an embarrassing condition called my balls was hot.
Great, isn't it? I've got quite a fan, quite taken with it.
Yeah, I'm intrigued by the fact he uses it at least once a day.
I love it. How
often does he have to shave his balls?
So, James, do you know a little bit more about the background to this story? Like, is he famous for having very hot balls?
He took his shorts off after a fight, and you know, Joe Rogan goes in and interviews him, and he says, "Derek, why'd you take your pants off?" "My balls was hot." And then the other day, he knocked a guy out in like 30 seconds after running at him, and as a 265-pound man throwing a flying knee and knocking this guy out, and then he took his shorts off and started kind of thrusting and stuff. So yeah, he's kind of like a very well-loved. He's a very funny figure in the kind of MMA community.
Right. So next question: is hot balls an actual condition?
Probably, but that's what I think. I think this is kind of genius, to be fair, because I'm just looking at the comments on the Instagram video. The top one literally just says, "Best ad ever, so I bought the product." that's what you want. I think Manscaped, because they've done this before. Like, they did a bit of like an assault on like all of the various kind of like podcasts that have a predominantly male listenership. So like, they're on like the Joe Rogan one, whatever, some of the other ones. And then they partnered with the UFC, which is again like predominantly watched by men. And they've just then played on this, I guess, meme. And it's just worked an absolute treat for them.
Cara, are you a fan of this?
I think it's brilliant. I feel like he's like the perfect person to do something like this. Like, the people love him. The fans have reacted in a really good way. I think it's worked for them.
Logan?
Sitting on the fence on this one.
Does it feel a little bit sellout-y on his behalf? No?
No. And also, that's the thing. Weirdly, whenever like UFC fighters kind of get sponsorships, there's always an attitude of like, yeah, good for you. Because a lot of them, they're not like on footballer salaries. Like, a lot of them aren't actually paid that well. So most of the reaction of this is, oh, great, I like Derek Lewis. He's probably getting paid a load of money for this. Good for him.
Yeah. So you need a little catchphrase after your...
Yeah, exactly. Well, yeah,
for brands to get on.
Well, kind of, yeah. And that was the whole Conor McGregor phenomenon, is that he was kind of the first person to really kind of clocked that this isn't a sport in the conventional sense. It's kind of a circus, it's a business. So now you get more and more people who want to kind of get these little gimmicks. Yeah. But the reason it works for him is because his gimmick is kind of just him, it's kind of natural, he's just a funny guy.
I think it's highly watchable, and like James says, I think you kind
of... I think it works.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not a fucking work of art, but like, I think just the understanding of who's watching this and who's going to be buying the product, I think it just works really well. And it's pretty kind of a low-cost thing for Manscaped to do as well.
Does shaving your balls make them cooler?
What? Yeah, of course it does.
Yeah. Of course it does.
Yeah. If your hair keeps you warm, that's why we're evolving to be hairless creatures, because we don't need to be warm anymore.
Hair would create a kind of...
a buffer.
A microclimate. Yeah, a buffer.
James, do you shave your balls?
I'm not answering that.
There's a yes. If
the
ever you wanted one.
Everyone's tuning in to know the answer to.
Okay, well, now we know the answer to that. I hope you're listening, Mrs. Allen.
How do you know, if you've shaved your balls, how do you know if someone's used your soap in the shower?
I don't have soap, I have shower gel, like a gentleman.
Shower gel and hairless balls. There we go. That is the way forward for the modern day man.
It stings.
Right, okay, on that bombshell, Logan, what have you got for us this week?
Well, this summer's been great for me because I've been to loads of festivals, so I was really intrigued to read in the paper yesterday, or the day before yesterday, that Kate Middleton went to Houghton Festival. I didn't see her there, personally. But that, along with the rising prices in going to festivals, made all the newspapers start going quite lazily, in my view, that a festival's now just for middle-aged, middle-class people. So I was wondering if anyone around here went to any festivals this summer, and what they thought of that.
I'm going to a little festival on Sunday in Beckenham Park.
In Beckenham?
Yeah.
In Beckenham?
It's really small.
There are just more and more festivals nowadays, yeah? There are, like, literally festivals, and I think a little bit like the internet in terms of, like, you know, culturally and subculturally, you can find your thing, right? There is an argument. So I live in Crystal Palace, and, oh, my God, they had the High Flying Birds, Noel Gallagher and the High Flying Birds there the other day.
Yeah, Primal Scream and Valentine. Was it My Bloody... No, Jesus and Mary Chain.
Yes.
Iggy Pop was there a few weeks ago as well. Yeah.
Before that, they had Iggy Pop, they had Blondie, and that is dragging in an older crowd. But I'm like, so what?
Yeah.
Like, so the fuck what? Like, those, you know, when you think about that lineup that they had that week with Blondie, Iggy Pop, and there was someone else amazing in that lineup. I can't remember quite.
It was Billy Idol, wasn't it? Because it was Generation Sex. Steve Jones, Paul Cook, and Billy Idol, and Iggy Pop, I think.
Which is living in clearly a middle-aged demographic.
Of course it is.
And me.
But, those are icons, yeah?
Yeah.
And if we are getting more and more iconic people back on stage, I think there's a lot of argument people say, it's like, oh, it's a money grab, it's a this, it's a that. I've seen Iggy Pop once, and he was fucking amazing. Absolutely. Yeah, exactly, yeah? So
are they just rinsing out the last of the proper rock stars?
I think so, yeah. I feel like particularly this summer, I've seen more and more of them being like, or at least getting more attention, because like the Rolling Stones are still going strong. There's Bruce Springsteen was somewhere in London like a couple of weeks ago, wasn't he? I quite like to see it. Like, I feel like some people are quite sneery about it. Like, oh, do you not just want to retire? Like, I quite like seeing Mick Jagger still strutting around the stage.
Yeah, I mean,
he's still impregnating women as well.
It's never going to stop, is it?
No.
That is never going
to
stop.
You'll have to kill him before he stops.
I mean, that man must have so many children. And like, just evolutionary wise, just like, but we're getting left with a load of Mick Jaggers.
Well, that's what I'm saying, because I think Al Pacino got some grief for this recently because he's like 80 and he's having a kid. I'm like, I like Al Pacino. I want more Al Pacino in the world.
What does make me cringe though, Logan, and listen, like, I've seen Blur twice this summer because they've been doing a series of gigs. I fucking love Blur, love Damon Albarn, love Graham Coxon, but Alex James,
he irks
me so much, and he's got the big festival, which is...
Get back to your cheese farm.
Yeah, exactly. Well, it's on his cheese farm.
It's
on his cheese farm.
In the Cotswolds.
And it's, like, very expensive to go. It's very targeted. at the Kate Middleton type. It really is targeted around there. And I can understand, in certain ways, you know, the first Glastonbury I went to was in 1995 or 6, right?
Yeah, you're well on.
Yeah. And, like, you'll know, Logan, these guys won't know. You didn't pay to get into Glastonbury.
No, you
climbed over the fence.
You paid someone a fiver to walk and to get under that little tunnel under the fence.
Exactly.
Or climb up
exactly.
The ladder.
And that was the way that you went to Glastonbury. If you were buying tickets, I'm like, what the fuck? Like, I've never met anyone that had bought a ticket to Glastonbury, right?
Yeah, and that showed a true festival spirit, that kind of you would have had people who had a bit of money there, but you'd also had the libertarians and the crusties and the people who created the festival culture,
the Grebos, the crusties and the goths.
I guess festivals changed then when Glastonbury decided to erect that huge metal fence in like 2000 or 2002.
That really was the signal of changing times, wasn't it? Because before that, basically, the onus of Glastonbury was like, it's a festival, but we're going to let you come in for free. Like, and there was a goodwill because of that. Now, it wasn't an announced thing, but they knew exactly what was going on, and it created, like Logan's talking about, there was a community of travellers, of crusties, of all of these sorts of people that made going to festivals feel like it was, I don't know, like it was a bit more revolutionary. Fast forward to now, and like, kids don't care these days if it's called the Barclay Card, like splurge in the fucking park. No one gives a shit what it's called because brands are so synonymous.
I think some still do. I think it's a bit lazy journalism to say that festivals aren't just middle class only. I guess Glastonbury, you know, 350 quid for a ticket to still sleep in a tent and queue up 5 hours to go for a shit in a disgusting toilet is.
It's a lot of money.
You have to think twice before you push the button to buy a ticket for that. But, you know, Boomtown was on last week, and I guess Boomtown is, in my eyes, the biggest festival that still has that proper festival spirit.
Even that's changed, though, like, a little bit.
Well, it has. It's
you've been wrecked at Boomtown, haven't you, James?
I used to go quite a lot. I went, like, 3 years in a row, and even just within that 3 year period, because I think I went, the first year I went, I think it was, I bought a ticket for £110, whereas now it's like 300 quid. So like, and you just suddenly notice like the crowd just got a little bit more shit every year, and there's just more 17-year-olds.
It's the same with everything. Though.
Yeah, no, exactly. People hear about it and they think, that sounds good. Yeah. I'm going to go ruin it.
Same as Secret Garden Party. I went to one Secret Garden Party. I thought it was amazing. Then I went like 3 years later, and it was just sort of like, it was a very Shoreditch affair. And I was like, this just feels like we've transported East London into a field here, and it just lost something for
they
me.
Lost it. Secret Garden Party lost it last year. Logistically, they completely fucked it up. I think, you know, we mustn't forget that it's been a very hard time for festivals as well, and lots of them have gone under, and the whole culture has changed. So it's, you know, it's a real gamble to put on a festival these days, because people are buying tickets at the very last minute.
I would say, though, like, we are living in an era that is amazing for live music. And never in my lifetime would you get so many bands playing in the UK so regularly, like, of big, of small, of, you know, like, everyone, because of streaming,
essentially. Because it's the only way they can make
the only way that they can make some money. But we are living in an era of, like, amazing live music, and you can get to see your favourite stars, whoever they are. Like, they will be coming to the UK at some point, or Europe, or wherever. You know, my daughter loves Taylor Swift. She loves Billie Eilish. And all the fucking people that cost a lot of money to get a ticket for. And they all come every year. All right, cool. Right, James, what are you saying? What are you thinking?
It's not up to me, is it? What do you mean? What am I saying? What am I thinking?
Well, I don't know. Like, I want you to mark Kyra's homework. You're the chief editor, the little chief of the Cool Shit Newsletter Stroke podcast. What did you think of Kyra's stories?
I had a nice time. The gay AI thing is objectively
terrible. Like, that's not good, is it?
It's not good, but interesting to talk about.
Mm. But interesting, yeah, exactly. That's what I'm saying. We all had a lovely time talking about what a horrible thing it was. And then Derek Lewis, I'm very much a captive audience for that sort of thing. I feel like that was targeted at people like me.
Beast of Boys with Alpha Dreams.
Yeah, because I look at Derek Lewis in that advert and I think that could be me.
Your balls are hot. All right, cool. James, where do people go and find the sign up to the Cool Shit newsletter?
Zachagency.com/cool-sht.
Brilliant. All right, listen, thank you, Logan, for coming along.
Thank you for having me.
Kyra, thanks for finding the stories.
You're welcome.
And apparently, I'm not very nice to you, so fuck off.
Love you too, babe.